Hello everyone, welcome to edition 164 of the NRF1 podcast, your Formula One podcast, straight out of Norfolk, UK. We are also on Future Radio in Norwich and brought to you by our proud partners, Grand Prix Racing Online. You can sign up to the game by visiting nrf1.uk or gpro.net/nrf1. I am sports journalist Michael Bailey. Good evening there. And we are here to review the Spanish Grand Prix in Barcelona, where the 2017 season caught fire.
Caliente.
Yes.
It means hot in Spanish.
Thank you. I did Spanish at GCSE.
Oh, right. You meant as a subject.
Head. Okay. Rude. No, I've forgotten it all. Clearly, as demonstrated right then. In this podcast, we will review all the key talking points, dig out another classic from Sebastian Vettel, ask if this was Fernando Alonso's best ever weekend ever, and dish out our Of The Weekend awards. It's all on our way. Joining us this week, you've already heard him, it is fellow NRF1 founder Perry Hamilton.
Good evening, how are you doing?
Very, very good, thank you very much. And Damon Hill fan and Mustang owner Richard Baxter.
Good evening.
Gentlemen, lovely to see you. Thank you so much for making the trip. I mean, I've literally had to walk 50 yards, but that was enough. Anyway, Barcelona delivering another great race. I can't really get my head around it, but that is 2 years on the trot. And I don't know if it's because everyone's used to driving the track and they go a bit, you know, rogue when it comes to actually doing the race. But Lewis Hamilton bouncing back, Spain delivering a cracking race. We're all agreed it was a cracking race?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, I was shouting and gesticulating at the screen and all kinds of things. I mean, I normally have to say that of a Sunday afternoon, I will on occasion watch a Formula One race and will use the opportunity to rest my eyes or check my eyelids.
Confession.
Yeah, I mean, on occasion you do, towards the end of it, or if you, or you'll look at something on your phone and you'll have it on in the background and you'll wait for the commentator to go, oh, and then you'll look and think. But no, I was glued to it, start to finish this time, properly into it. I thought it was cracking race.
As we're confessing, I had to watch it delayed because I haven't got Sky anymore at the moment. I have no access to
it. I had it on record. I was driving back from the West Midlands when it was actually on, so I had it on record and watched it when I got in the afternoon. There's no shame in that, Michael.
Thanks, Ped. I didn't know what the result was when I watched it, which was great. I did see a few people say, it's cracking. And actually, towards the end, I didn't know if something else was going to happen, and it didn't. I was like, oh, okay, Lewis wins, so that's fine. But the actual battle all the way through was special, I thought.
Yeah, it was. And the race had everything, really, because you had the strategic battle between the two top teams there, and, you know, trying to outbluff each other and things. And, of course, you had the on-track battle between the drivers. So everyone was fighting, you know, each other. And of course, the first corner completely kicked off and kind of helped the race as well, because we lost really three big drivers pretty much at that first corner who could have been up there fighting as well.
Yeah, it greatly altered the dynamic of the race. We'll get stuck into that in a little moment. Lewis Hamilton, the only driver now to have won the Spanish Grand Prix twice in the last 11 years. That's because obviously we had 10 different winners in 10 years before the weekend. I mean, he does know how to bounce back, doesn't he? And also, I mean, the celebrations, I think Ben Edwards said it at the time, they meant a lot. You could tell it meant a lot to him, given he put so much into it as well. He was panting on the radio. I've never really heard anything like it.
No, and that's a point that many people picked up. Actually, he was working the car, and he had to work the car. He didn't let the car come to him. He went out and grabbed the car by the scruff of the neck. Now, why we're surprised by that, I don't know, because we've seen Hamilton drive cars that aren't necessarily the most drivable, and he's driven them on the ragged edge. And that's why we often talk about him in the same breath as a Fernando Alonso or someone like that, that can really take a car, and I mean, and even, well, I would say Jensen, but that's a debatable point. But we've seen Hamilton do it before. But because the Mercedes was always such a wonderful, well-tuned, well-oiled machine that was this, you know, point and go, and it was the fastest thing out there, he only ever really had to battle Rosberg. And I mean, we all know that over the last three seasons, or that's only really been one season's worth of battle. But we shouldn't be surprised that Hamilton was working the car. It was nice to see. It was refreshing to see. And it was a well-fought battle.
I don't want to be cynical, and I'm probably going to be cynical quite a lot tonight. But Lewis likes drama, doesn't he? It did seem like he was making the most of, oh, I'm really working really hard. I don't know. It seemed like he was happy for us to know he was trying hard.
It all adds to the action. I mean, I think it kind of shows that he's, in some ways, the kind of guy he is as well, where he's still trying to provide action for fans. Okay, it might have been a bit faked, but I have heard as well like things, because obviously the G-force is so much higher this year, like especially with the turn three at Barcelona. I've heard before they say if you're going through a really fast corner with really high downforce and a lot of G-force, you need to hold your breath to keep your body firm enough to be able to like cope through those cornering speeds and those forces. So I suppose if he is having to control his breathing that much because he's pushing so hard, I can understand where it comes from.
You're catching your breath almost all the way, aren't you? I mean, I've never sat in a Formula One car, so I wouldn't want to be too harsh on him. Good old Lewis. And I guess this was kind of symptomatic of the development race that we had as well, wasn't it, Pep? Because, you know, it was the big major upgrades were all coming in. And in terms of Mercedes, they kind of won the battle. And we'll have to see if they've won the war. But that car they rocked up with looked completely different. I think Sebastian Vettel at one point said, yeah, well, not all updates are flashy ones, as if Ferrari had all the ones that were under the hood, but still.
No, and actually, I think, I mean, not to take away from the point about the upgrades, they were important, and they were, and Sky ran maybe it was Channel 4, I can't remember, because I watched the qualifying on Channel 4 and I watched the race on Sky. It was Channel 4. Channel 4 ran a very comprehensive piece about...
With Karen Chandhok, it was excellent.
About the changes that had been made and the T-wings looking different and where were the side pods and how they were shaped. And you know, we know it's an aero package, especially towards the latter part of the race. Barcelona's an aero track. But I actually think it was Mercedes just got their act together overall over the weekend. Some fantastic strategy calls, which I'm sure we'll come on to later. But some absolutely outstanding strategy work, good support all over. I mean, Bottas, they always ran the risk with the engine because he'd run that engine for so long. So that was always on the cards, and it's 50-50. He's not your bell cow. He's not the number one driver in that team. If he was a number one driver in that team, he wouldn't have had an engine that could have given up the ghost. But they made some fantastic adjustments and it paid dividends.
There's a couple of points there and we'll come on to Valtteri in a moment. But let's do the strategy stuff now, shall we, Richard? Because the big question is, could Ferrari have done much more? I mean, I think I heard it mentioned on the Checker Flag podcast that it's been Mercedes who've been making the small errors. But this time around, it was Ferrari who possibly made the small errors that made a difference, certainly in terms of, say, Vettel's pit stops. But in terms of strategy, was there much more they could have done?
Under strategy, they were, towards the end, they were talking about three stop. And that was just sort of, that's never going to work. Because if you come in, he's going to come in and do the same thing. So they're always going to cover each other. They were pretty well matched on the racetrack. That's where it was won and lost at the end, because Vettel had the longer lasting tyres towards the end of the race, and Hamilton had to go a long way on the softs. So it could have been touch and go as to whether he would have made it. But it was won and lost on the racetrack. They was overtaking on the track. They were still quite close together. That's what it came down to in the end. I don't think they really messed up massively, but there was a few things they could have done better with the pit stops and things like that.
But also, you say, I mean, I always thought from the moment it came out that from the moment Hamilton got past Vettel on turn one, for me that was academic, because the one thing that we haven't seen this year, that we've consistently seen in previous years, is the cliff. We don't see it anywhere near as much as we used to. So what Ferrari were expecting is our tyres will last longer, Hamilton will wear his out, he'll hit the cliff and we can rocket past him. Well, unfortunately, his tyres were never going to hit the cliff, because that doesn't really happen as much anymore. And on another track where you've got the opportunity to pass, maybe that would have worked out for them. But take into account where we were racing, there's only really one place where you're going to see overtaking, and that was at turn one. And Vettel was never going to get there. So yes, it's a sound strategy if all things being equal, but actually tailor it to that particular track, and it was a bit of a cock-up. I was talking to Rich before we came in, and one of the things that really struck me about Seb when he was in the green room just before going on the podium, and he was talking to Ricciardo, and he said I was 8 seconds ahead, and the next thing you know, he's right there. I don't know where those 8 seconds went. And I thought, how can you not? Hamilton pitted under the virtual safety car, got out, the virtual safety car went away. So he's got a full lap at race pace while you've had to go around in virtual safety car speed. How has this not been communicated to him? When, you know, when he comes out of that pit lane and Hamilton is side by side with him and he, quote, forces Hamilton off the road, whether that was or not will remains to be seen. But how did he not say, geez, guys, I had an 8 second lead. Where's this come from? How was that information not fed to him?
Yeah.
You know, what is the level of communication at Ferrari or not, as the case may be?
And that was proven as well further in qualifying, because Arriva Bene came on the radio and said, turn the engine off. And he said, are you sure? And then he said, okay, carry on. And then it was fine. Yeah. So it's just like, if you had done what you were told and hadn't been that arrogant, you know, cocky racing driver, you'd have to start last. And we've all been robbed of a really good race.
We would. And the overtakes were absolutely fantastic. We have Vettel and Hamilton, as we touched on. The way that Vettel got past Valtteri Bottas was a wonderful dummy. I mean, that's proper racing. And we do seem to be, as you said, Vettel kind of nudged Hamilton off the track. And Lewis was fine about that afterwards. They do seem to be allowing them just to be a bit racier, which I think is great for all of us. Hamilton did say he kind of sensed that Vettel seemed quite angry after the race, and so maybe it'll be Sebastian's turn to bounce back next weekend and make the most of it. Just on Valtteri, I think a few people have kind of already written him off, and we kind of touched on it. I guess it was the fact that he won in Russia that made us sort of think twice about writing off Valtteri as whether he's going to be an actual challenger in this title or not. But as you've kind of mentioned, Peb, we're looking at someone who is going to... He did a great job of backing up Lewis, but that is what he's going to have to do.
I mean, the commentators, I think, on Sky, in Martin Brundle, I think it was David Croft, actually said it, that if this comes off and Hamilton wins this race, that's effectively Bottas has won two races, one for himself and one for his team. And he did exactly what he was told to do. But I think part of that comes from the fact that both drivers understand that if the field was reversed, Hamilton would have been told, look, you're not in it, back him up, and Bottas is going for the win, and we can maybe hopefully get you on the podium. And Hamilton would probably have been less willing to go on with that because he is a multi-time world champion and that's the mentality he has. I don't think Bottas is going to be a championship contender this year, but I think next year, year after, I think definitely he should be looking to almost stand on Lewis's head and push him into the ground. I mean, he should be looking at, because this year you're starry-eyed, aren't you? You're, oh my God, I'm in this world championship team, and I was courted, I was headhunted, I was the guy brought in, and it's all magic and it's all sparkles and glitter. But that's going to go away, and you're going to have to start winning races. And the only way you're going to consistently win races against someone like Lewis Hamilton, because he's not going to have the run of failures and bad luck that he had last year. The only way you're going to consistently win races is if you grab him by the scruff of his neck and you shake him and say to him, you're nothing, I'm coming for you. And I don't know whether Bottas has that in him.
I think the best thing Bottas can do for this season is prove himself to the team and say, look, I'm a race winner, I'm a potential world champion. You know, get used to his surroundings, learn everything, get used to the car, and just make sure he's got that contract for next year, because obviously I think it's only a 1-year contract he signed, wasn't it? And you got Alonso and some other big people who are going to be looking to get up to the front there.
Well, aren't they just? That's spot on. And just a word here for the noise that Valtteri Bottas's car made when it retired. Just like a strangled cat. I think DC said that, David Coulthard, strangled cat. If you haven't got it yet, then keep an hour free and sit down to edition 160 of the NRF1 podcast, when we go through the Motorsport Network Global F1 Fans Survey. It's top listening, and we're still waiting for the results of the survey, so it's still relevant. We solve a lot of Formula One's issues, of course, down the pub, which, as we all know, is how the world works best. Now, the best way to make sure you do not miss a single one of our podcasts is to get yourself subscribed to the NRF1 podcast through your podcast player of choice. That will deliver the editions straight to your mobile, desktop, or tablet. All you need to do is visit nrf1.uk/podsubscribe, and there you'll find your subscribe link, be it to iTunes, Audioboom, Google Play, Spreaker, Stitcher, Acast, whatever. And if yours isn't there, just let us know with an email to nrf1podcast@gmail.com, and we may even have some representation on SoundCloud soon. That's on my list of things to do.
I use iTunes.
Have you left a rating on iTunes yet, Ped?
Not yet.
Can you do that, please?
I'll do it now.
Make sure it's a five stars and a nice little comment. And anyone out there, if you feel like doing what Ped's just done, do that. And we will duly be noting them, because we're going to get some merch and sort all that out. More of that to come. Anyway, there we go. Right, it is time for our Catalunya NRF1 pit stops. Let's start at Ferrari, shall we? I know we've already talked about Sebastian, but Kimi out very early in terms of crashing with Valtteri, of course, and also Max Verstappen, and that put him out of the race too. I've seen that a lot of the fault's been pinned on Bottas, but I mean, it just looked like a racing incident, to be honest.
It is racing incident. It's three cars side by side going into a tight right left. It was never really going to come off. It's getting ahead of it. It's like Monaco. There's always someone who tries to overtake at the hairpin and makes a dick of themselves. And it's that kind of thing. You know that if you're going to go in three abreast into a corner, it's almost definitely going to end in tears. And it did. But I mean, I'm not going to complain. It gave us a good race at the end of the day.
And they've got to do it. If you don't go for a gap, you're not a racing driver. We know how it all works, don't
Absolutely.
We? Now, let's talk about the crying fan, shall we? Because Kimi going out sent poor Thomas Danel. He's French, so it could be, but Thomas Danel, maybe, if you're English. Little boy. Sent him crying in the stands at Barcelona. Next thing we know, he's in the motorhome with Ferrari getting pictures with Kimi Raikkonen. From crying. So obviously someone had sought him out from his crying and brought him down to the garage and, yeah, come on. I think David Coulthard made the comment, oh, now you'll get every kid crying in the stands wanting to get a place. I mean, obviously that would be terribly cynical.
I think Crofty said the same thing on Sky.
I mean, is it just us?
Rundle. Someone said it on Sky. They said everyone at Silverstone will be crying now.
Now, let me get this right. I'm a dad now. This is brilliant. But
you say now, you've been a dad for over a year.
Well, it has been a while. You know, lovely. What a brilliant experience for the kids. Great PR. Great for Formula One. All those sort of things. But I mean, you know, it'd be a bit like, why are you crying? There's a great race here. Enjoy yourself. Maybe. I've also got written here plant ? Because it is such a great PR story. It wouldn't take much to have a crying kid and go, you know, this will look brilliant.
Do you know the only thing that makes me think is genuine? It's Kimi. I mean,
they just didn't tell him. It's a plan, but they didn't tell Kimi.
So it's Ferrari did it. But I think, I don't know. I just think because it's Kimi, the fact that he's gone ahead and done it. I mean, he's not known as a personable person, is he? He's not known as being the most welcoming. He's quite. I mean, if you saw his post rate, his after his crash, he did an interview. Oh, frosty is not the word. I mean, they call him the Iceman, but even for Kimi, I mean, he's just, it almost was this burnt a hole in them looking through them, as if to be like, what do you want me to say? What, I'm out on the first corner, what do you want me to say? And then the thing that pushes me more towards your camp, Michael, is, well, firstly, how do you know it's a plant? How do you know there's going to be a Ferrari going out? Because ideally they want both cars to finish, don't they? So you're not going to get a crying kid at that point. You're not going to put a kid in the crowd and go, kid, if we smash out one of our cars on the first corner, turn on the waterworks.
I'm not being funny, but Seb was second still. Like, get a grip, kid.
But I don't like Seb. I like Kimi.
He was a front wheel, yeah.
See, this is my point. I like, and this is where I become a bit more cynical, is you're a what, 7-8-year-old kid? How have you settled on Kimi Raikkonen as your favourite driver? Kimi hasn't probably won a race in the time that you've been watching Formula One. The only thing I can assume is that it's maybe a mother or a father has a love for Kimi and was a big Kimi fan back in the day and has carried that enthusiasm. And so the kid wants to be like, but you know, I don't know. But at that age, you haven't seen a good Kimi season that you can remember. I mean, seriously.
The logistics of as well of someone going, oh, there's a kid crying. We need to get him in the garage and meet Kimi. Do you know where he's sitting? Oh, yeah, right here. All right, we'll send a few people up. We'll get him down. Oh, now he's in the car.
No, I do think you could. The camera will find him. And okay, who's? So all you've got to do, you're the race director or whatever, and you get on the camera and you go, who found the kid crying? And then I don't know. Carlos puts his hand up and goes, that was me. Or estas me. I don't know, right? And he says, yo,
¿Dónde está la little crying boy?
Yo soy. And he says, okay, what section were you filming? Where was your camera pointing? And he was like, I was in the grandstand that I'm assigned to, which is grandstand 1A or wherever. And they went, right, so where were you pointing your camera? When? Okay, well, zoom back. Okay, it was there. Right, I can see the little baller there. Okay, Let's send someone to him. And then he gets, it's not as hard as you think.
No. And look, it's a great positive story because it's probably the thing that, in all the papers, it's the kind of thing that's everywhere. It's a great positive PR stuff. And, you know, in fact, it's a lovely story. I'm being very cynical.
Do Ferrari need to generate that kind of PR falsely this season? They are legitimate contenders. Sebastian Vettel's the leader in the World Championship at the moment. They are challenging. After years of mediocrity, they are now challenging again and they are getting towards the front of it. So do they need to start pulling in this false PR?
Well, I mean, they wouldn't have known Kimi would have been out the first corner. So that's the key crux of all that. And I guess a lot of it is, this is Formula One, we're not used to it. Almost as an indictment of where Formula One was.
But then as well, I was thinking, is that Liberty Media having part of their thing? Because I said I want to get fans more involved. And think credit to, you know, that was really nice to see the kid go and meet his hero, basically.
It was. Just for the record, it was.
I think if I was that age and I was lucky enough to go to a race and I saw Damon Hill crash, I'd be pretty distraught, to be honest.
I mean, that's the way. Bring it back to the fans, Rich. You put me in my
Rich,
place.
Rich, if I saw Damon Hill racing today and he crashed, I'd still be distraught.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
You know, we're all still in that boat with you. We're all that kid at heart in many ways, aren't we?
I'm not. I'm clearly a grizzled hack. I'm a miserable.
It did annoy me because I was like, but at the same time, I was on that side of it. Was, why is he crying? It's still the race going on. But it's something you've got to get used to as a young Formula One fan, is watching your guy in Adelaide getting smashed into for
Rich
no
has
reason.
Never got over it. He's no. never got over it. This is the podcast, Rich. It's not therapy. It's not group therapy.
That is a wound. Look, the fact is, Thomas, I hope you had a brilliant time. Fantastic. Basically, I'm just jealous. That's the reality of it. I wish I could meet Kimi again, although I have interviewed him. Quali, we should just now mention, we've just got time for this. Sebastian Vettel on the team radio. You're welcome.
Oh, I f***ed the chicane. I f***ed the chicane. Oh, no. Sorry, guys. I had it. The last chicane I lost. I missed the apex in 14 all weekend. Sorry, guys.
How about that?
Loved it. For those listeners that are cynical and think that we only get together and talk to each other for the pod, I actually text Mike at the time of that happening and said to him, Mike, have you heard Kimmy's new radio message?
It was literally within seconds of me hearing it.
And it was cool because I was watching it on delay as well, so I'd only just watched it. And I messaged Mike so thinking that he'd have watched it. I was just like, have you heard? It's amazing. We've got to get it on the pod. So yeah, we were talking about work while we're now doing the work.
This isn't work. For the interest, if you go to one of our episodes last week, I can't quite remember which one it was. Oh, probably our Russia preview. I pull out a quite spectacular impression of Sebastian Vettel's radio message when he got knocked out by Daniel Kvyat. I have to say, one of the best, greatest impressions I've ever given.
I heard it. It might have been a preview, actually. Yeah, it was one of the ones you
definitely
did
last week.
Steve and Kyle. It was with Steve and Kyle, wasn't it? So, yeah. So, yes, it was outstanding. I'll give you that.
Thanks, bro. Yeah. Well, you can hear it. That's probably episode 162 off the top of my head. Red Bull. So Daniel Ricciardo finished on the podium. Could anyone have finished on the podium? I mean, given that Max and Valtteri and Kimi didn't finish the race, I suppose it was Daniel's not to muck it up.
It was there for the taking for him.
Thank you. That's what I was trying to say.
Gift wrapped.
I mean, Max had said he was bigging up the upgrades before the race, but were they all that? In free practice, it didn't seem like they brought actually that much. The engine wasn't upgraded because that got postponed, didn't it? So we're kind of still waiting on Red Bull, and time's wasting, isn't it?
I mean, I think they were closer in qualifying than
Max was.
So Max was within three tenths of Raikkonen in qualifying, which is fairly good going. I mean, it was within 6 tenths of Hamilton.
And it was a brilliant qualifying performance. The issue was Max was half a second ahead of Daniel.
Yeah. Don't know what was going on there, because a lot of people I think Jake Humphrey was saying, watch out for Ricciardo this season in their early podcast with him in.
He was?
I don't know what number, but
No, that was 146. I know the more. E146 is the season preview with Jake Humphrey. Give it a listen. Me and Jake in his kitchen. He did tout, and I think we all want Daniel Ricciardo to do really well. But Max got taken out of the race, so it looks like, oh, Daniel got a podium, everything's great, but he needs to up it, doesn't he, Ben?
Yeah. My point is, and I was talking to Rich about this earlier, you go back and listen to Rich and I talking in the pub before we did the podcast with the survey, and we both said, you know, look at Renault. At the moment, the only thing stopping Renault being better than Red Bull is the quality of driver in the car. Now, you take Ricciardo, you take Verstappen, you put them in those Renaults with the upgrades that have just come through, and they'll be good. You take those two drivers and put them in those Force Indias from this weekend, and they would have performed better.
That's a really interesting point, because it does bring us back to the fact that Renault have their own works team. You know, you talk about engine upgrades being postponed on Red Bull, they might end up bang on the same time at Enstone, which is the team they really need to push. But anyway, I did just want to touch very briefly on Williams. Felipe Massa had a really weird, ragged weekend. And really interesting that now, after what happened in Spain, Toro Rosso are ahead of Williams in the Constructors' Championship, which is kind of where I saw Williams being at the start of the season. It almost surprised me how well they'd done in the opening races. I think we're now starting to see maybe a regression to where I thought they would be. McLaren too. Obviously, we've got to talk about McLaren. How could we not talk about McLaren? Within 10 minutes, the first lap of FP1, Fernando Alonso's car gives up. Great description on Channel 4 from DC of the car just spilling its guts as it was lifted up and just chucking out all sorts of oil and fuel. And I didn't know what the fluids were. What did you reckon the fluids were, Rich?
I heard that was oil. Okay. It was down to an oil leak, which would make sense.
I mean, it was on a load of oil. I mean, it was literally like a slick of oil. But of course, then Alonso sticks the car P7 in qualifying. Incredible. Race was crazy. He then has to fly straight out to Indy to do free practice, which he's probably doing now as we record. McLaren are the only team with no points in the Constructors' Championship as things stand, yet it was the first time Alonso had finished a race this season. Meanwhile, Van Dorn gets a three-place grid penalty, I think, doesn't he, for Monaco for smashing into Massa, and he seems to be showing a lot of inexperience that we maybe thought we wouldn't see from him.
He took a grid penalty at the start of the race.
He did as well, that too. That was for changing the gearbox, was it, or the engine, one or the other, wasn't it? Something they had to change.
It was a mechanical change.
And then we finished that with Felipe Massa saying, "Are the mirrors on the McLaren actually working?"
Love him.
Could they physically get the mirrors wrong? I'd hope not.
Well, no, they're just, I mean, McLaren are just a bag of spanners at the moment, aren't they? I mean, they are ugly and just...
P7 in qualifying.
I have to say, one of the nicest things about it was Alonso, P7 in quali, didn't have a great race, but had some great driving in him. He really did do some outstandingly good driving.
It's the home fans.
But he was never going to be up at the front end of it. But it was still absolutely lovely that at the end of the race, someone gave him a Spanish flag and he drove around with a Spanish flag. And I thought, actually, do you know what? You can be proud of yourself this weekend. You never were expecting anything. You gave him something to cheer for on the Saturday and you've done your best in a dog of a car on the Sunday. So hats off to him. I mean, great work from him.
Home fans, indeed. It was the home race effect, wasn't it? And quite simply, love Fernando Alonso. It's that straightforward. You can follow us on social media. The channels are Twitter at the NRF1, Instagram at the NRF1, Facebook at the NRF1, that's the handle, or you can visit fb.me/the NRF1. We are giving the website some TLC at the moment as well. I say we, me. So you'll find over the coming weeks that it'll have hopefully a little fresher look and hopefully be easier to use too. That's nrf1.uk. Are you right there, Pedro?
Yeah.
It sounded like you were laughing at me.
No, it was a stifled yawn, actually.
Well, that's much better.
Well, I listen to every single pod that I'm not on, I listen to, but I don't listen to my own. But every single pod that I listen to, I'm there. So I know all of these like the back of my hand.
So do the people listening, probably. You lovely guys out there who we like very much. But the website is nrf1.uk, and you'll find blogs, stats, our latest prediction league standings. I say latest, up until Spain, but I'll be updating them during these 2 weeks. Early and everything.
Mine were on point.
Yes.
I only got two predictions wrong.
I don't know what I did. I dread to think, but Ped did have a weekend of it. That and more, including betting tips, talking about clean sweeps. Kyle, clean sweep on the old betting. Not happy about that, because I didn't put any money on any of them this week. I've done it the last 2 weeks when all turned up.
But you know the race was good when you can enjoy it without having to have money on it.
That was a good race.
That is very true. I just wish I'd had money on it. But Kyle, well done, because he knows his stuff, back on form.
Hello, everyone. This is Jake Humphrey here. You're listening to the best Formula One podcast from the best county in the world, the NRF1 podcast. And I wasn't paid any money to say that.
No, I did give you some beers.
Right. Time is wasting. Much like for Red Bull, it's our of the weekends. We're going to slice through these nice and quickly if we can, please, gents. Our Rodolfo Gonzalez, driver of the weekend. Ped, you've got your notes out.
Daniel Kvyat qualified last, got bumped up to 19th because of Van Dorn's engine penalty. Stuck it ninth from last place on the grid, Daniel Kvyat. I know there's so many honourable mentions that we can go through here, and I know you guys will, but so I won't step on your toes. But for me, just for the race, and we've he's much maligned on the podcast, is Danny. Yeah. And actually, hats off to him, he had a cracking race.
I mean, the last things we said about him were very positive because of the way he's bounced back. But that's
considering that this is the anniversary. I mean, this really is. This was the first race last year that he was in that Toro Rosso, and his replacement went off. The two guys in front of him clattered out, and his replacement went on to win the race in his debut. I mean, it's a tough pill to swallow. A year to date, fantastic drive from Danny Kvyat.
And with Kevin Magnussen trying to drive him off the track too.
that was a good shout. I want to give it to Verlaine though, because he had similar kind of things. He had to struggle with a Sauber with last year's Ferrari engine, and he managed to get eighth. He would have had it better if he had been able to drive one side of a wallard than the other. Because he got a 5-second penalty for entering the pits wrong. But, I mean, he's still got eighth. He's still got some valuable points for Sauber.
Spot on. Not only that, the first points for Sauber this season, and P8 is his best ever Formula 1 finish, as was the case with Esteban Ocon, who finished P5. That's his best ever race, so I think they were all our honourable mentions.
Both Ocon and Wehrlein were in Manor last year, of course, so...
Boom. Team of the weekend.
As in one.
Yep.
Force India.
Yep. Agreed. Yep.
Force India, yeah, fourth and fifth. Outstanding work.
Spot on. Just honourable mention, though, they have been fined €25,000 for not sorting out their numbers on the front of the car. So they're at the top of the nose, so you literally can't... They've got too many sponsors on their nose. So they obviously don't want to move them because you can't... When they're coming head-on, you can't see the numbers for the drivers because they're over the bridge of the nose. So they're on the top of the car, so you'll never see that. But obviously, the sponsors have paid money to be on the nose. So they've been fined money for that.
Can we just very quickly mention that there seems to be some chatter around the fact that Bernie Eccleston might be fronting money to buy Force India and...
Oh my goodness, get him running a team. Amazing.
Yeah, that's what he was talking to Brundle about. And I mean, Bernie was Bernie, so he was just like, yeah, sure, you can drive for me. And there was a bit of banter about it. But actually, he's got the money to do it. And what a way to stick it to Liberty Media to say, you want me out of F1? Tough. And people will listen to him. He will be influential. If he owns a team and he goes into those team and team owner meetings and things like that, he will be incredibly influential.
Oh, wouldn't it? It'd be a Bernie scorned as well. It'd be brilliant. Oh, what about that? Pastor stroke goat of the weekend.
Magnussen was on. I've got it written down here. He lost points due to being at turn one on the penultimate lap.
Summed up perfectly.
I mean, it was utterly... All he had to do, stay the f***ing course, Kevin, for the love of God, and get your team some points, well-needed points. And also, get yourself a pat on the back for finally doing, you know, a little bit better than the guy behind you, maybe. But no, classic Pasta style f***up. Admittedly, not at Barcelona, because that's where he won. Yes, I know.
In that very first podcast we did.
I'm going to give it to Van Dorn. Just because he simply drove straight into the side of Massa. they put the camera on board and you could see the car alongside, and it was wheel-to-wheel contact, so it's like you knew he was there. And it was just some ridiculous... I don't know what he was doing.
No, neither does he. I mentioned Romain Grosjean. Sorry, Kyle. Oh, we're digging out the Haas drivers, aren't we? Basically, because he told his team to work harder after his error in qualifying. the team needs to work harder. It's, you know, their fault that I drove. So there we go. Highlight? I mean, there were some great moments in the race.
My highlight, the one that I literally jumped out of my sofa for and clapped my hands, was the Hamilton pass on Vettel into turn one after he'd been building up for it and gearing up for it and building and chasing. And it was that, you know, that moment after you'd had all that build up and he'd gone for it and then he hadn't. And then Vettel got those, you know, a number of laps where he was able to use DRS and it negated Hamilton's advantage. And then I thought it was quite funny that Vettel got on the radio and said, oh, you know, like a train. Couldn't have stopped him. Like a train, mate, like a train. And I thought, actually, no, you know, you've managed to do all right. But yeah, and also, as you say, the move from Vettel on Bottas and that sort of weaving and the move and the defending and then the aggressive driving, absolutely fantastic stuff. Really, really good racing.
Yep, spot on for me.
I've got two. One for all the hilarious reasons was the Toro Rosso engineer who came on and said to Carlos Sainz, okay, try your best to overtake. And it's just like, what the hell do you think he's been doing for the last 10 laps when he's been on this guy, who was it, Wehrlein's tail, wasn't it? It was just sat right behind him. It's like, yeah, try your best to overtake. He's just like, I am, just shut up. And the other one was, to be honest, the marshals, or stewards, I should say, we were seeing these racing incidents now. They exist.
Spot on. No, I couldn't agree more. I think that's fantastic.
An honourable one in there, and I don't know if everyone watched the same coverage as me, and if you did, please get in touch and let me know that I wasn't going crazy. Sky coverage, I think it was either at the beginning of or just after Martin Brundle's grid walk, they cut to the camera going down the grid following some guy, and I think they still had an audio feed from somewhere that they shouldn't have had it. And as you've got this shot of this quite an older gentleman in a white shirt sort of walking down the pit lane, and you just heard quite muted underneath just someone going, nice. And I don't know what that was all about, because you could then hear some chatter in the background and then they very quickly cut away from it. So I think someone had left an audio channel open and it just was a... It was quite
a great shot.
Yeah.
What a shot.
There was the other footage of during the grid walk of the some glamour woman who was there, and she got the camera in the back of the head.
Yeah, they
got hit. Really?
The back of the head with a camera. It wasn't Sky's camera, it was someone else's camera, but she was just standing having a conversation talking to someone and then smacked her in the back of the head.
Well, I am reminded of episode 161 where we discussed grid girls and women in Formula One
I had some thoughts on that, and I had some thoughts on the money side of things as well, but we are running out of time, so we'll save those for another pod.
We will save them for another pod. Well,
credits to the woman, because she didn't do what Montoya did all those years ago and try and punch someone for it. So,
well, maybe she should have done, to be honest. Ridiculous stuff. Look after your cameras, people. The only highlight I've got to add wasn't in Spain. It was at Snetterton, Norfolk's finest track, which will never host a Formula One race, sadly, but, you know, never know. And the Formula 3 team that was racing with Dan and Mark Springall, and is ably backed by Callum Springall, who, of course, is on the podcast, they carried an NRF1 sticker on the car. That extra weight, I'm sure it played havoc with the aerodynamics, yet the car ended up in one of the races on the podium. So we are a podium-winning podcast, everyone. Round of applause. There we go. Thank you so much to Mark and Dan for all the effort and all the team. I don't know which team it was, because it was a bit of a funny weekend. So I'm sure we'll find out. Hello, NIF1 podcast. Hello, Michael from the past. This is Michael from the future. Just to confirm, the team was CF Racing. They were taking part in the F3, that's Formula 3 Cup, at the mini festival at Snetterton. There were three rounds of races over the weekend at Snetterton, and driver Jacopo Sebastiani finished second in the first race, fourth in the second race, and third in the third race. I make that two podiums out of three races. Boom. Big thank you to all the team. We look forward to hearing more from you over the course of the year. Thank you so much, guys. If you want to see the pictures of the NRF1 on an actual race car, then visit our Twitter and Facebook, and you'll see them all on there. But we really appreciated that. And hopefully we'll get involved with them somehow, or we'll maybe go and see them next time they're racing at Snetterton. That would be great. And we'll do some podding and some audio and some visual. But also, hopefully, it will lead us to actually having some merchandise, some stickers and badges and like that. Because, you know, a couple of people may be interested in you listening now. You may like that. We could maybe do a pack if you help support us on Patreon, or we can do prizes and best contributions, all sorts. But that is in the plan. And hopefully some T-shirts too is still in the offing. So we're going to sort all that out. But I think we're done. Gents, thank you so much. Next week, you know the drill by now, I'm sure. Three podcasts in 3 days, including our Monaco preview and predictions. But starting with our F1 news review, featuring your audio submissions and questions on our Twitter and Facebook pages. If you want your voice heard on the podcast, simply press the red button over at nif1.uk. But for now, a very goodbye from Ped.
Goodbye.
And from Rich.
Goodbye.
Thank you to our proud partners, Grand Prix Racing Online. You can sign up at gpro.net/nrf1. And thanks to Future Radio, of course. And a very big thank you from myself. This has been the NRF1 podcast. Lewis bounced back in style in Spain. Now it's the turn of everyone else to follow suit in Monte Carlo. And we'll be right there with you to lap it all up. Until then, goodbye.